And my guest for the Executive Suite program, when we take a look at what is going on inside the Executive Suite at agencies across government and learn about the decision-making processes that are going on there, is Pete Cironas, the Chief Technology Officer, the Energy Department. Good to see you, Pete. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks a lot, Francis. Good to see you as always.
How was the trek down from Germantown today?
The trek down was smooth. I missed an exit on 495, but I did a quick loop around. So.
All right, beautiful. It's great to have you here. It's always good to see you.
Thanks.
We have a bunch of things to cover today. You were known for a long time as the IPv6 point man in the federal government. Where does that stand now? Because it made a lot of noise for a while, and now it seems to kind of dissipate. It's not something we hear a lot about anymore.
Right. Well, it hasn't dissipated. It's frankly one of those initiatives that's really crossed over from 2005-04 timeframe when Karen Evans was spearheading the effort. I kind of got involved at that stage and ultimately started chairing the working group at the time. But no, it's full-fledged. We've got a mandate on agencies now by 2012, September 30th, to have their public-facing sites, websites, if you will, V6 operational. So this is about the infrastructure, right?
Right.
This is digitizing our infrastructure that's antiquated so that we can all communicate globally. Mr. Kundra and Anish Chopra, that is, got in front at the National Press Club last year at this time and said 2 years from now, we're going to make V6 real and operationalize it. So we meet monthly. We've got a full slate of folks who are the transition managers, 60-some strong folks, give or take a few. And we just had a big presentation at the FOSSI exhibit, John Curran and Martin Levy from Hurricane Electric. John, who's the CIO, or if I'm not mistaken, the CEO of American Registry for Internet Numbers. So it's more globally recognized, I think, than it is here in the States, but yet the world's watching us.
Yeah.
So it's rocking and rolling. It just doesn't have that sexiness as it never has, actually. It has that sexiness when you talk infrastructure. But we talk about it as the next generation internet protocol, not IPv6.
Yeah. It seemed, though, for a while it was something that was getting a lot of coverage in the federal business world. And then, it seemed like people stopped paying attention to it. I wasn't implying that work wasn't continuing because I had every confidence that it was. It's just maybe it was our fault in the media because we stopped covering it or paying attention to it.
Well, I think it hit a trough for a while. It's crested a bit. We had World IPv6 Day this past June. I don't know if you were aware of that, but there was globally companies like Facebook, Amazon, Yahoo, you name it, Microsoft, Google, and others. They decided and they turned on V6 on those sites so that folks who were V6 native endpoints could actually communicate. Now, here's the best way to put it in context. Here in the federal government, we don't have every one of our websites running a V6 protocol and a V4 protocol, meaning if you're out there in some country and you're literally natively running the V6 protocol on your device, odds are you won't be able to talk to a government resource because we aren't running what's called a dual stack implementation. And that just means we need the internet to talk two different languages, V4, which stands for version 4, and V6. So we need some of those events like World IPv6 Day to evangelize and keep it going. Other countries are building their infrastructures out in this next generation protocol. We were the first in the States with the internet. Now we're going to, you can almost say, be the last out, which is why we're playing catch up. But it's nice to have these milestones or opportunities to bring V6 back to life. And we had that in June. But now federal government has a mandate, something, a stake is in the ground that they have to meet by next September.
This is happening at the same time that Vivek is talking about reducing the overall number of websites in the federal government. So you have, on the one hand, this move to version 6. And at the same time, some of the sites, hopefully not the ones that have been converted to 6, are going to be disappearing altogether. Is there a tie in there for the work that you're doing?
I think there's an awesome tie there, which is something that can force the agency representative, whether it's the CIO or whomever, to reexamine their infrastructure and the state of it, right? To put a moratorium on .gov domains or what have you. It's forcing us to say, hey, if we can't do that, let's look at how we've built it up to this point. And most folks in the internet industry will tell you that while the first generation of the internet, IPv4, has served us well, it's it's a hodgepodge. It's a collection of Band-Aids that has worked out to the benefit of us as consumers, or we as consumers. But now, by reducing that and not saying, hey, just create another website, ask for a V4 address, not only can you not procure that address anymore, there aren't any more being issued by the regional internet registries,
mm-hmm.
but it's forcing agencies to go, and again, I say awesome opportunity, to say, you know what, if we've got to move to this V6, maybe now's the good time. Let's don't put that request in, or let's maybe think about consolidating or reducing the number of websites and the associated maintenance, because it's costly mm-hmm. to maintain websites.
Yeah, and I think that's something that a lot of people don't understand who aren't involved with it on a day-to-day basis, the amount, what goes on under the hood and what it costs. I think people pull up a website and they see whatever.gov, and they go, well, it's just a site there, and their experience doesn't give them any indication of what is really involved there.
Well, thank God for a domain naming system, right? So now it's www.fedradio or fednewsradio.com.
Federalnewsradio.com.
Whatever yours is, right? Behind that are numbers, four octets of numbers. And if we didn't have DNS, we wouldn't be able to, we'd have to remember a lot of digits. So on the one hand, when you think about re-architecting a network, and IPv6 has changed totally that numbering scheme from 32-bit to 128-bit, you got to have some smart people, network engineers, systems engineers, who know how to do that and keep the pipes and the flow of information happening behind the walls. That's mm-hmm. why they call it, it's like an infrastructure plumbing exercise.
Yeah.
There are people, Francis, who are doing this for us, smart people, really smart people. Whereas what you and I see is we click buttons like we turn on a flip a switch on electricity. We expect light to come on. We expect a page to be served on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're heading to a point where that may not happen. There may be a break in continuity of service. And that's why this critical piece, the infrastructure, needs to be addressed, emphasized. If you think of it like a pyramid, it's the infrastructure. But the tipping point or the top is what you and I see as consumers. And we just expect it to work. Well, if you really get into the weeds of this, and we can speak for hours on it, we're getting to that point where we're running two languages again on the internet,
mm-hmm.
and ideally you want to be running one. So we're asking routers and switches and devices to be smarter, as well as having people to monitor it.
Pete Tsironis is my guest, and he is the chief technology officer at the Energy Department and is the point man on IPv6 for the federal government. When we come back, I want to talk about maybe some more broad-based stuff that you're involved with, and not even necessarily so much from your work at Energy, but just from being involved in the federal community. We'll do that when we return on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose.
Government IT Solutions Spotlight is brought to you by CDWG.
The Treasury Department is moving to electronic invoicing and expects to save $7 million a year. Treasury will require all of its bureaus to use the new internet payment platform by the end of fiscal 2012. It will also mandate all of its vendors use the portal by 2013. The platform will speed up invoice processing time by 50% and reduce errors for both the agency and its vendors. The internet payment platform is part of a 12-initiative program to reform federal financial management.
If you're in federal IT, you know the pressure to maximize your agency's IT investment. Visit cdwg.com/datacenter to see how our experts have helped federal agencies virtualize, optimize, consolidate their data centers, and reduce ROI pressure. CDWG, people who get it.
Visit cdwg.com to learn how you can achieve the benefits of private clouds with a VCE V-Block solution from EMC, Cisco, and VMware.
For over 80 years, Motorola has been committed to keeping Americans safe. Today, Motorola Solutions provides interoperable communication systems that are built to open standards so federal, state, and local agencies can work together in emergency situations and be their best in the moments that matter. That's why first responders and others dedicated to keeping citizens safe choose Motorola Solutions, because they know Motorola Solutions always puts public safety first, just like they do. To learn more, visit MotorolaSolutions.com.
Schneider Electric has a proven 100-year-long record of supporting federal agencies to help you meet your responsibilities to mandates, missions, and taxpayers by combining the expertise of brands you know and trust, like Square D, APC, and Pelco, to make your energy safe, reliable, efficient, productive, and green. When it comes to power, process and machine, IT room, building, and security management, Schneider Electric's your energy expert and green partner for a sustainable and prosperous future. Visit Schneider-Electric.us.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit MatrixDirect.com.
Sometimes I worry about what would happen to my family if I lost my job. But I never really thought about what would happen to them if they lost me and I didn't have life insurance. My cousin's husband died, and now she might have to sell her house just to make ends meet. I don't ever want to put my wife through that. So I called Matrix Direct.
Hi, I'm Brent Langdon for Matrix Direct. We partnered with American General Life to find you their lowest rates on term life insurance products. If you're 40 years old and married, we could find you a $250,000 policy for less than $16 a month. Call now for a free, no-obligation quote. 1-800-588-5514.
I feel so much better now that I called.
It only takes 5 minutes to see how you could save up to 70%. Call now. 1-800-588-5514. 1-800-588-5514.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In the executive suite today with Pete Tsironis. He's the Chief Technology Officer at the Department of Energy. And you're not just involved in what's going on at the Energy Department through your work with the IPv6 Working Group and some of the other organizations you're involved with. You're getting a good sense from what we've talked about on the air about the level of collaboration in the IT shops all across government and the changing and evolving roles. We talked before we went on the air about the changing and evolving role of the CIO and then of your colleagues, CTOs at different agencies. Some agencies, I guess, don't even have them yet. And they play different roles and do different things at the different agencies. I've talked in this program to a number of different CISOs who have different views of their relationships with leadership at the agencies. What are the structures, without calling attention to particular agencies or people, what's the structure there and the breakdown of responsibilities and portfolios that you think works well at an agency, not necessarily at Energy even, but what's that division of responsibility look like now effectively, do you think?
Well, thanks to Klinger Cohen, the CIO came to be. Before that, we had the IT or IRM division directors and so forth. That was actually around back in the day when there was pre-Klinger Cohen. But I've seen this evolution over time to where it's actually molded me as a federal employee and helped me choose a career path to where I am at the current in the current state. And that is CIOs for years, and I think to some extent still catch a bad rap for being the guy or gal at the table that are just told to go do this, go fix that, versus being the visionary type of individual that he or she truly is. The CTO, I think, too, has evolved. You read about the history or the legacy or the beginnings of a CTO, and it was typically an engineer in a shop doing scientific research who was the chief technologist or mm-hmm. the technology geek. I like to introduce myself and say the T doesn't just stand for technology, but mm-hmm. it's transformation, it's thought leadership, it's these kinds of things, not more than just technology. We're blessed at Energy to have a new CIO who's been here about 9 months. Mike Lokaitis comes to us from the States, where he was the CIO of Colorado, the deputy CIO to Terry Takei out in California, and actually had experiences at that level managing IT consolidated. And actually, he built it, if you hear his story, from a very decentralized situation into one where, you know, he can practice what he preaches. And what he's doing here at the office or the Department of Energy is helping blend that into what's really a federated environment. So mm-hmm. he's a new breed of CIO to me, and that's being a bit biased because I work with him. But Mike and the CIO Council, I think we're seeing folks are leaving and new folks are coming in. There's an emphasis on best practices. There's an emphasis on shared services. And I think the CIO is clearly still, I mean, clearly still has a seat at the table. But I'm seeing CTOs becoming those partners, those complements to a CIO. Because unfortunately, boxes and wires is usually attributed to a CIO.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unfair because they're visionaries as well. CTOs, I think, are just, again, complement. Look at Anish and Vivek,
mm-hmm.
right? Two different individuals, two different styles, yet both having an impact. While we're all sad to see Vivek go, I mean, his legacy is he spurred this concept of innovation, cloud computing. Anish teamed with data.gov. We're sharing information that's always been out there in a region now through the data.gov portal. So I think we've seen a huge leap in what innovation really means in the government, and as such, the roles associated with being the ambassador of that, whether it's a CIO, the CTO, the chief operating officer, the chief knowledge officer, that's what's happening in government now.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I'm doing my part, and I couldn't do my part without working in complement with the CIO. But more importantly, it's about the mission in my job. I need to, whether I'm at Energy or in another federal venue, I need to connect with what is the mission trying to accomplish by way of technology to improve business from a productivity standpoint, an innovative, a strategic standpoint. And that's exciting stuff.
Here's my observation. Tell me if you think this is fair or not. From a technology perspective, it seems to me that the nugget that you just laid out there, that your connection is to the ultimate mission of the agency and not to the IT shop, is something that maybe just in the last couple of years, maybe up to 5 years, has been something that CIOs, CISOs, and CTOs across government have really tuned into. That before that, maybe the mission of the agency wasn't always foremost on their minds. It was the nuts and bolts stuff that you talked about before, and that they're getting the idea that if we're going to be included in the C-suite, if we're going to be in on the meetings and we're going to be a direct report to the secretary and we are going to have his or her ear with credibility, that then just running a great IT shop has to become secondary, and that overall agency mission is number one. Is that fair?
That's a fair statement. I couldn't agree more. It was awfully eloquent as well.
I don't know about that.
Well, you nailed it. The term boxes, wires, the plumbing, that isn't a bad thing. See, people look at infrastructure and say, what is that?
Yeah.
Cat5 cable, routers, switches, firewalls. Well, that's the heartbeat of what allows us to do and conduct business the way we do today. Who wants to look in electricity? You want to talk something sexy? You talk the smart grid. You want to talk about what our grid really looks like and our control systems infrastructure and our distribution systems. People don't want to go there. They flip switches. They expect it to work. How mm-hmm. do you think we're going to migrate to a smart grid one day if we don't really get into that technology and understand it?
Right.
CIOs, technologists in general, take the C-suite element out of it. Every agency has that agency identified individual who is to be that leader in that area. A chief financial officer gets a lot of play and a lot of plug as the person with the bean counting, but we don't look at that bean counting and managing dollars, and or if that's the budget officer, you name it. The IT folks, and I've been guilty of this. I spent the bulk of my career running an operations center at the Department of Education, and I lived it and learned it and breathed it to where sitting in a data center is a pretty amazing thing, and the people who support it, the skills you have to have. But you aren't seen in that light. I can go to a meeting and talk about voice over IP, or I can talk about intrusion detection systems, but it's not going to resonate, and you don't have that time. People, it's not that they don't care. It's usually, well, I'm not an IT guy, but we're glad we have you at the table. Let's move
right.
on to what's the mission. So what we're seeing and what I've tried to do is I've kind of, shifted roles or gone to the other side of the fence, is connecting with the mission, having dialogue with folks who are in that mode of, I need to get this done because I'm a national lab at Energy, or I need to get this because I'm one of the folks at the Office of Federal Student Aid at the department. I know technology needs to get me there.
Mm-hmm.
Just make it happen. Well, I don't stop and say, you got it. I go, well, I need to know your requirements.
Mm-hmm.
I need to know what it is you're trying to do so I can marry you up with the right solution. The dialogue, you had said it at the outset of the segment, the collaboration, that's what I'm all about.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a CTO And there's some, I mean, folks that I've had the fortune of getting engaged with. I mean, and you couldn't ask for a better spokesperson than Anish as being a CTO. He knows technology, knows how to talk to it, knows how to translate it. That's what we, in at least my role, I need to be effective at, but so do the CIOs. The onus is on, if you don't want to be a translator of technology to the mission folk, then that's old school. New school is you have to have that dialogue, so that whether it's I see Secretary Chu in the hallway and he wants to have a dialogue about, you know, some nuclear reactor that's being simulated, I can understand, well, how can IT enable that, not in the scientific realm, but what are we learning from that exercise and how can we share that across the federal government? Mm-hmm. So that's exciting. I mean, people ask me all the time, you know, what is it you do at your job? Well, a lot of it's dialogue, but mm-hmm. a lot of it's being a connector.
Mm-hmm. That connection is what I want to get to when we come back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Pete Tsironis, the Energy Department's my guest, and we'll continue our conversation in a moment.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Department of Veterans Affairs experienced some data breaches when employees used commercial public cloud sites to collaborate on documents. So rather than clamping down on the practice, VA says it's working with a large cloud vendor to create an identical version of its document sharing product, but secured especially for the department. VA isn't saying which company they're working with, but they say it will work just like the public version. Users will have to be authenticated through the VA network in order to use it.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology. Information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Stroke is this country's third most common cause of death. The blood clots that cause it might be attacked with a technique somewhat similar to one for treating kidney stones. Targeted waves of pressure are used to destroy kidney stones, and as you can clearly see when opening a soda bottle, pressure changes also form bubbles. So Andrew Seri, a mechanical engineer at the University of California in Berkeley, thinks the blood clots causing stroke might be cleared if
we send a strong, focused pressure wave through the skull to the place where the blood clot is.
The resulting bubbles don't have to break the clot apart, but in combination with drugs,
it's about loosening up the network of the blood clot so that the drug can penetrate more easily.
And refinements might even make the process so effective that it can be drug-free. To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Cloud computing. Your data and apps must move easily and securely to reach many clouds, not just one. That's why the network that connects, protects, and lets your data move fearlessly through the clouds means more than ever. See how. Cloud Advantage for Government. The Fed Cloud blog on federalnewsradio.com. Brought to you by Cisco and Intel.
Profile America, Tuesday, August 2nd. The recent expensive and controversial Broadway show about Spider-Man has put the superhero back in the news. Actually, Spidey gets around pretty well for his age. It was this week in 1962 that Amazing Fantasy Comics appeared with the first story about teenager Peter Parker. Bitten by a radioactive spider, Parker finds he has superpowers and has to deal with the responsibilities that come with them. Spider-Man is one of the most commercially successful superheroes worldwide. Aside from Broadway, he has appeared on television and motion pictures while continuing in newspaper comic strips and comic books. Close to 40 new shows open on Broadway each year, drawing audiences of more than 12 million. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
Attention all military, active duty, retired, and all authorized family members. Your Quantico Marine Corps Base Commissary is on the road and bringing your hard-earned commissary benefit directly to you. This on-site sale will take place at Fort A.P. Hill, August 18th and 19th. Come out and experience savings that average more than 30% on all your groceries. For more information, visit commissaries.com. And remember, your commissary, it's worth the trip.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Pete Tsironas is the Chief Technology Officer at the Energy Department, and I love your enthusiasm. You have your notes, and you're just rubbing your hands, waiting to get to the next thing. It's pretty cool to have you in here, Pete. It's always good to talk to you. We've talked a lot so far about connections and collaboration and the importance of that in the IT community in government. And something that you and I were talking about during the break, something that you said really kind of crystallized for me what the conversations that I've had with people like you, your peers across government, over the last couple of years. And that is the idea that the IT shop can express to the rest of the agency, not just here's a box, this is what's inside it, there's 58 wires and two connectors and that does thus and so and blah, blah, blah. And you explain it in such a way that only some other IT person would understand it. And the people in the room are either nodding off and their chins are going into their chests, or they don't understand what you're talking about, or both. And the connections that you're talking about building so that somebody will not only understand the importance of what you're talking about to the ultimate accomplishment of the mission of the agency, doing their job, but also doing it in such a way that they can engage in what you're saying and say, yeah, not only do I get what he's saying, I care about it and I understand what difference it'll make. Talk about how you try to essentially translate what you're doing into English so that you can achieve that buy-in and that I care about this level with people.
Sure. Well, I have a couple examples, and I'll try to weave one into this, but it comes down to me towards the relationship that you have to build and the credibility that you have to establish. Last summer, we did a strategic road mapping effort that ultimately led to a crowdsourcing exercise. And really what it was is one question asked to 140-some thousand people across the DOE, and that was, how can IT better support your mission? We had a lot of feedback. We had a one-to-many question. We didn't have to go door-to-door, but we did a little bit of that, a little bit of the blue sky approach.
Mm-hmm.
And the first 5 minutes, you can tell in these dialogue sessions, were, who is this guy? You know, why is he coming and not the CIO? Mm-hmm. Well, I'm an extension of, working with, we're here to talk about, what are your challenges? You get into a dialogue, people want to tell their story. Mm-hmm. I say that all the time. It's amazing. Quick sidebar, we do these quarterly summits. And what was born out of that, which again, dealt with relationship building, what value can the CIO bring to the table? We now do quarterly summits. We're going to have our third summit August 16th at the Department of Energy, a geospatial summit. We're keeping our fingers crossed of landing Governor O'Malley to be our keynote.
Mm-hmm.
I hear he's the GIS governor, big fan of geospatial. But we bring in Department of Energy people telling Department of Energy stories about the infusion of technology or the innovative things they're doing, whether it's a lab using tablets or if it's a program office, using some cloud computing solution. It's just that dialogue that I'm finding that niche to be for CIOs, or at least the office of the CIO, to say, we will facilitate this dialogue and this discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get these, quote, real people saying, here's the impact IT had on me at the National Lab, at Berkeley Lab, at Argonne, somehow coming from them, it just sounds more interesting than maybe it's that IT person preaching.
Yeah.
And that's where we're not making it a trade show. And in dialogue, we don't want to come across that way. But, hey, I'm guilty as charged of having been there, of trying to sell the benefits of IP telephony, you know, years ago, when you could see it wasn't so much nodding off. It was that initial, sounds great. You know, I'm glad we have you here in the mix, Pete. Go make it happen if it's going to save us money. I walked out of there not feeling like I made my point. I walked out of there saying, I don't think he or she got it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you said on the break, too. It's one thing to translate. It's another thing to have that individual or individuals engage in the discussion,
yeah,
and actually say, I want to learn more.
Yeah, because you can explain stuff to people in such a way that they understand it. They just don't care about it.
They just don't care. But you need to make them care to say, and back to your point, how does this technology improve my ability to do my job. Mm-hmm. It's not just carrying an iPhone or a BlackBerry around and saying, hey, I'm mobile. It's what can you do now with your job being a mobile employee, mm-hmm. which because mobility is a big thing right now. iPads and playbooks and Android devices are popping. It's that cusp of, wow, it's not a toy. Now, how does this help me do my job more effectively? Do you build it into your telework policy? Do you allow folks to truly work from home? How do you assess them working from home? Technology is not the problem.
Yeah.
It's just with that comes policy and change and culture that needs to be addressed. So
we saw that a lot with the introduction of social media at agencies. Agencies would say, well, we'll get a Facebook page and we'll have, and the next question then is, well, what are you going to do with it? Well, we'll just have one. And there wasn't necessarily an understanding of how this would help us communicate with people or disseminate information that needed to be disseminated or direct people to resources or whatever. It was more the means. It was more the end rather than the means.
Or the thing that people are doing. Oh,
yeah.
I've got a tweet. I've got to have a wiki site. To your point earlier, why did we get to where we have so many websites? Well, that was the thing to do, put up a website versus thinking, at what point do we re-architect it so I don't have to give out varying levels of websites to so many people, which is why now a lot of agencies are looking, how are we going to consolidate and eventually maybe offload a lot of that to the cloud? So you create a lot of work on the back end if you don't think it through in the front end. And I'm guilty of doing that. But as we get smarter with technology, again, that's never the problem. It's what will change as a result of that deployment or that adoption of technology.
All right. I've got a big long list of things that I want to get your thoughts about, and we'll tear into that a little bit when we come back from the break. Pete Cironis of the Energy Department's my guest in the executive suite today on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Robert Lentz, former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Cyber Identity and Information Assurance on the Cybersecurity Combating Threats to Our Software Environment panel, sponsored by Hewlett-Packard.
What new technologies and challenges do we want to give the innovators to be able to get on top of this issue of the information technology race that we were starting to get into? And one of the challenges, we need to do better automated forms of software security. And we need new tools to do that, where we now have these automated capabilities to finally get on top of this problem.
Could your IT security have made you less secure? Traditional IT security defenses, firewalls, encryption, and intrusion detection systems are extremely effective, and that's the problem. They're so good that the bad guys are now training their sights on a new target: exploitable vulnerabilities in software applications. HP can help governments secure mission-critical applications by designing security in from the beginning, finding the vulnerabilities inside existing software, and fixing them quickly and cost-effectively. To learn more, visit federalnewsradio.com/HP.
The challenge is to accomplish your mission even when you're under cyber attack. The cyber analysts at Kinetic North America, along with their proactive cyber solutions, can protect your critical information. With mission assurance solutions, insider threat identification, and advanced persistent threat detection, they have the technical and cyber capabilities to keep you ahead of threats. Learn more at kinetic-na.com/get-secure. That's kinetic-na.com/get-secure. When it's critical, it's Kinetic North America.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris.
FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt.
We spent more than 2 years modernizing and making it efficient, building morale, and then to have this happen through no fault of anyone here. This is a political fight, and if people want to have a political fight, they should go rent a ring and get in it and have it. But to take 4,000 innocent FAA employees and literally tens of thousands of construction workers and put them out of work, I find this unconscionable.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federal. Drive.
Did you know Federal News Radio can also be heard on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland? Check it out the next time you head to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor. Tune in to Federal News Radio for the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Pete Cironis. He's the Chief Technology Officer at the Department of Energy. And we've mentioned Vivek Kundra's name a couple of times. You can't really have a conversation about IT and government without doing that. But he's gone very soon. You said before we went on the air, I think it's 12 days?
Yeah, generally. What I'm hearing is middle of the month. So
okay.
That would put us about 12, 14 days out. I mean, anything can happen, but that's a lot of parties are being thrown for him, you know. You get the emails to give him a goodbye, so it's probably happening soon.
If that's the case, then it is not too early for us to go into the post-Vivek mode and start to think about what IT looks like after Vivek leaves. He's introduced a number of initiatives. He's started a number of programs. What do you do personally and at your agency to make sure that the things that he's started will continue even though he's not going to be there to push you on them?
Well, like whether it's Vivek or Karen or Mark Forman before her, you build on the predecessor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what I've liked in what Vivek's brought in, or his perspective, if you will, he ushered in this concept or this terminology, cloud computing. I remember his inaugural speech at a GCN event. He talked about his pillars, and cloud computing was one of those, and shared services and so forth. So if we were to say in 2 years, what needs to continue, even though he's leaving, I mean, cloud computing is part of our vocabulary now. It's a paradigm to consider. So he's ushered in a different way of thinking. And where's Karen and the whole concept of enterprise architecture? She built off Mark Forman and created Chief Architects. I mean, we're thinking about how we architect not only the technology, but the business and the process and the people as well. A couple other things Vivek ushered in: vendor engagements. He pushes targeted procurements, rapid implementations, modernizing the planning and the implementation of IT. This is a new way of thinking, and while some folks make debate, you know, it's too out or too pie in the sky, I think that's what Vivek brought, was, again, another perspective. So what has he done? He's energized the federal IT community. There's still a great team to carry the torch. You've got Lisa Schlosser, Dave McClure, Anish Chopra, the entire federal CIO council, and fresh perspectives and leaders like my boss, Mike Lokaitis, Terry Takai. But Mike, you know, I'm biased. He's probably listening. Mike's doing a great job. He's bringing the state-local perspective. I know Vivek appreciates that, and that's rare. You got a lot of CIOs who haven't ever had that experience. Sonny Bhagwalia is going off to be the CIO of Hawaii. He comes back.
That's not terrible duty, is it?
No, not a bad gig. But if he comes back, think about the value he could bring in terms of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, and probably the biggest reason for how the momentum will continue, is that change and modernization are this absolute imperative.
Mm-hmm.
You've broached a number of technologies or paradigms: cloud computing, IPv6, mobility. These are things that are not on the horizon. They're now. And we have to continue to evolve. We're already behind the scale, if you will. And there was a time we had the coolest products in the world were in the government. My colleague Jay and I talk about this all the time. Now, we see people walking on the street or businesses carrying the coolest devices, and you're still using that broken down old BlackBerry or God forbid, even a pager. So the technologies are there. It's like, how are we going to get there and get beyond just keeping the lights on and innovating, which is something we talked about on the break?
Okay, a couple of things there. Nobody really has pagers anymore, do they?
Hey, listen, I wouldn't bet my money that nobody has pagers. I'm sure there's some folks carrying. I've seen people carrying those.
All right. Another thing, no disrespect to Sonny, but if he leaves the gig as the CIO of the state of Hawaii to come back to Washington, I think we have to – there's an intervention there, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
And any agency would be lucky to have him, but –
Hey, listen, no. In all seriousness, he said to me he was looking forward. It was something that, yes, it's Hawaii and all that, but the perspective – being Hawaii would probably be a tough sell to come back, but that's the kind of thing you said earlier. We talked about on the break as well, as how is this evolving role of a technologist? How does he or she add value? Well, it's breaking out of the mold, maybe going to take another job for a year or taking another position and then bringing it back home when you're back being a CIO.
Well, one thing that I've seen a lot of CIOs emphasizing in their own personal development is the idea of just doing kind of general leadership and general management type abilities, because the same issue is present in the CIO evolution, or the, I guess, the climb up the ladder that you see other places in government, and that's you get promoted when you're good at the technical elements of your job, and you don't necessarily become a manager because you've demonstrated the skills that are necessary to be a good manager. You're good at doing whatever the job was, and so the theory is we'll promote you to be in charge of other people who are doing what it is that you're good at doing.
And you're absolutely right. 22 years in public service, I could say I've seen it happen. I've seen it happen to me. I've seen it happen to others. But again, I made a decision in my career, just to use me as an example, is I was going down the path of, I guess I'm going to be a technology guy who lives in a data center.
Mm-hmm.
Nah, that's not what I want to do. There are people who, that's their passion. When you have the opportunity in IT to go into management, it's what type of manager are you going to be? Are you going to manage technology types? Are you going to manage the propeller heads? Are you going to manage, you know, visioning and strategy? Well, blending a lot of that, I think, without being a subject matter expert in any particular area, really adds value to that role. So you're not just a seat at the table being reactive, but you could become a proactive visionary strategist, so that that head of an agency or corporation will say, that guy needs to be on the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't just have an action item,
yeah.
Or she.
Yeah. You mentioned some of the introductions that Vivek has made into the discussion in the IT community and government, some of the things that are very different than when he started. Are those woven enough into the culture of government IT now that we can feel pretty confident that they're not just going to kind of disappear or fade away when he's gone?
Yes and no. Yes, it's always good to be repetitive and talk about the great work that GSA does, or the Federal Acquisition Service, right, on contracts that are out there. Is every agency taking advantage of GSA vehicles? No. They're still going out and procuring directly with vendors. Cloud computing, we've been talking about it. How many people are really going to step up to the plate and do it? You can go down the list. HSPD-12 is still something we're talking about. Has everybody adopted that initiative? No, but there's progress being made. I think it's this repetition and then adding a little bit of a twist to how you need to deploy or make something, as I say, adopted when it comes to IT, not just implemented.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of Vivek and his legacy or what he's done, he, I think, has built on the work that you could say Karen preached about. Karen Evans was fantastic, given that she was rooted in the federal sector and grew up in government and had a perspective on operations and security and enterprise architecture. So she was able to tie a lot of that together, and yet she served a lot of that time in the government. Vivek came from private sector and from D.C. government, and still was able to blend in his piece or his perspective on how IT needs to modernize. So these leaders, those positions that people have, whoever the successor is, I'm betting will add something, and it would be to his or her benefit to build on the good work that Vivek has laid out. And mm-hmm. that is to keep government moving in this direction, to create inertia, to, as my friend Don Burke says, move that organism somehow, some way, because it's really easy to be status quo.
Mm-hmm.
It's really tough to truly innovate. And that's more than just words. You could be a powerful orator, but you to really make it happen, you've got to be that IT person influencing the, as you say, the other folks in the C-suite, the budget officers, the financial officers, the assistant, associate heads of agency, secretaries. Mm-hmm. They have to understand what you're trying to do and how it's going to benefit them from a mission perspective. So, you know, this is something that we could be talking about next year, and regardless of who the new administrator of e-government is, there'll probably be some piece or niche that that they brought to the table. And hopefully in a parallel form, the CIOs, if we want to just put them all the technologists into one area, are migrating and adopting that and becoming those evangelizers of the message coming out of OMB.
The one of the things that Vivek has instituted are the TechStat sessions, and you've adopted those at the Energy Department. Just done one recently, and your CIO is writing about it. Just posted yesterday on the CIO Council blog. So let's chat about that to wrap up a little bit when we come back with Pete Cironis, the Chief Technology Officer at the Energy Department, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome to Beltway Q&A. The guest is Dan Doherty, Vice President of EMC Federal. Today's question, how can IT managers support the mission while facing budget cuts and the increasing cost of managing information?
Federal customers have to do more with less. EMC Unified Storage saves you money in two ways. It's simple to use and reduces your storage cost through greater efficiency.
So EMC Storage saves money because it is simple, efficient, and affordable?
That's right. Federal customers can do more with less.
Looking for more answers? Visit EMC.com.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything. Boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to them about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Schneider Electric has a proven 100-year-long record of supporting federal agencies to help you meet your responsibilities to mandates, missions, and taxpayers by combining the expertise of brands you know and trust, like Square D, APC, and Pelco, to make your energy safe, reliable, efficient, productive, and green. When it comes to power, process and machine, IT room, building, and security management, Schneider Electric's your energy expert and green partner for a sustainable and prosperous future. Visit Schneider-Electric.us.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few. The proud. The Marines.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Pete Tsironas of the Energy Department is my guest in the executive suite today. And we mentioned TxDOT sessions a few minutes ago as something that Vivek has instituted in the time that he's been the CIO of the government. And your chief information officer, Mike Lukaitis, is writing about the TxDOT sessions that you all are doing internally at the Energy Department on the CIO Council blog, and we'll have a link for that up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. But talk about how that evolved and why you decided to go that direction instead of just doing them a different way or doing them at all, or why that way and why what you're doing.
Sure. And to your earlier point, this is something that was instituted, has become part of our vocabulary, TxDOTs. I think it's an awesome opportunity for an agency to, warts and all, kind of show the OMB folk, and that's typically where these were started, where Vivek would go around and, in his case, conduct TxDOTs. I sat in a few. They are not what they talk about on the street.
No, because what they talk about on the street is that they're brutal and that they're
you know, maybe they are, but I'll tell you what, it that's not what I experienced. And if anything, it allows OMB to come and kind of hear the challenges from the mission in this case. Again, you know, OMB is good about pushing out policy and mandate and so forth, but to live the life of an agency trying to make a lot of it happen, that dialogue alone is part of this collaboration theme. So taking TxDOTs to another level, our leadership, led by Mike, we had one recently on public key infrastructure. And again, we don't need to have Vivek there or anyone from OMB for that matter. And even though we do have a representative, in this case, we had Jim Moss there, great guy who's helping out at OMB. It allows us to start to conduct and really have the dialogue with each other. And again, it, you know, Mike's leading it. We'll have representation from other folks, other stakeholders, as we refer to them. on how's this program doing? Are we behind schedule? Are we under budget, over budget? It's a checkpoint. Now, pre-TechStat, you might have an IG investigation just saying, are we using our dollars wisely? And that's where you get the, oh my gosh, we're going to get crushed in this meeting.
Mm-hmm.
This, to me, not that I have anything against the IG. I used to welcome IG investigations because it was to say, hey, here's what's going on. Here are problems. But the TechStat method is really something that I think is going to continue to be a success. I'm excited we implement them. We actually have things, and I couldn't give you the full definition, but TechStrats, technology strategies, might be something that's an outgrowth from this, where we can actually strategize as a group collectively on technology, not just react to the latest thing that needs to happen, for mm-hmm. example. So it's great leadership. It's definitely something that we've embraced at the Department of Energy, and I hope other agencies are as well, because it gets that dialogue going in the right forum.
This time just tears by when you're in here, man.
I know.
We're just about done, and I appreciate you coming in to talk about all the things that are going on at the Energy Department, and look for it. It's been like a year since you've been in here, that we shouldn't make it so long next time.
No, hey, listen, I've got stuff I'd love to talk about, and we're doing great things. I'm working with great people, and yeah, there's never enough time.